Welcome, everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club's Technical Question and Answer Net. My name is Roy. My call sign is AC2GS. I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Bob, KD2NVB, will be my co-host of on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers, as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages, and we also offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder, and as a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club's website, and the link can be found on the front page of our website in orange colored type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, just type into your browser puzzle.kc2rc. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com. And we also have an Echo Link node available. Just point your Echo Link application to the node kc2rc-r. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month. All of this information can also be found on our club's website, which is www.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our website. No question is too simple. No question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your first name, your call sign, whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order, and I will provide a cogent answer, hopefully. Bob and Bob KD2NVB will join in as well. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment and, when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know either here or use our email address, which is tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net, Bob KD2NVB. Good evening, Bob.
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody out there. I hope there's some guys are out there. I'm looking forward to a good net tonight. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Likewise, I hope there are some people listening on their radios or Echo Link and have some questions or some comments. So we're open for business. Anyone out there has any questions or comments of a technical nature, please hit that push to talk and give us your first name and your call sign and whether it's a comment or a question.
Delta Echo Juliet, question or comment? Joe, Phoenix?
Okay, very good, Joe. We'll take your question first, and we'll ask again after in case there's someone who's just listening in who's a little slow with the push-to-talk button. What's your question for tonight, Joe?
Just got my EchoLink working on my gaming computer, so I have a backup since my laptop broke. I have since fixed it. Is the volume okay on this, Silver?
Yeah, the volume is fine.
Okay, great. I had to go to a proxy. I don't remember if that's how I set it up originally, but I used a proxy, and I'm connecting fine with this. When I tried to use it last time, I couldn't get on. I think it was because I had no proxy set in the settings, but that is correct. I use a proxy. I picked one of the ones I think you gave me a list of a couple of use. Is that correct? Back to you, Roy.
It sort of depends. If you only have one a computer with one IP address, your router will be able to forward it properly. The problem is once you've used that one IP address, if you use any computer or if you use the same computer with a different IP address, your router gets deeply confused, and that's when you need a proxy. So on my main Shack computer, I don't need to put a proxy in because, you know, like I said, you get one for free. if you make sure that the router doesn't choose the wrong one from an initiation, but all the others, unfortunately. If you use a cell phone, the cell phone software seems to use its own proxies, so you don't have to set that proxy. But if you have other PCs, or if you're using anything but the first IP address that you ever logged in through your router, you're going to have to use the proxy.
But thank you, Roy. That explains it. Yeah, because this is the second computer through the same router. And I was I tried to get on the 10 meter net, and I think it was Howard N2GOT was hosting the net, because it sounded like his voice, but it was too weak. I couldn't make anything out. Maybe when the time changes and I'm 2 hours away, I might get a little bit more sun up in my area. Was it Howard on the 10 meter net one Sunday? Back to you.
Yes, last Sunday was Howard. I think he had some problems getting to the site he was using, so he logged on at around 11:30.
Well, that might not have been him then, because I think I was on right at 11 your time. Well, since I was spinning around the dial, I heard some people talking that were out here in Phoenix, and they basically told me what was wrong with my laptop, so I was able to fix my laptop. Back to you.
Oh, good. It's nice that they were able to help you. Pray tell, what was the matter with your laptop?
It was running hot, so I thought something was wrong with the fan. I tried blowing it out and everything else, but they said that out here that they weren't talking to me even. They were talking amongst themselves, and I just happened over here. And they said that, yeah, here in Phoenix, you gotta take it apart and pull out the whole heat sink and blow the fan out from having it from the other side, because there's so much dust here. And also the paste gets dried out real quick, cracks up, and actually holds the heat in. So clean off and replace the paste. I pulled it out, and there was a ton of dust, even though I was blowing it out with canned air from the outside of the computer. Once I got inside, I blew a whole ton of dust out, and big clumps of it, and then the paste. I redid the paste because the paste was all dried and cracked and everything. So it's cool. It's shutting down. It's doing everything it's supposed to do. But I damaged the, I think when it was overheating, it must have did something, corrupted some of the windows. So the easiest way to fix it was just to upgrade to Windows 11. So I'll find out if that was a mistake or not. So far, it's like cartoon. I can't figure out what anything is, because I don't recognize what their new icons look like. They're all like cartoons. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Okay. I find Windows 11 to be adequate. They broke the taskbar. So if you did a lot of things through the taskbar, like in the good old days with Windows 10, you could actually load files by dragging the files into the taskbar icons. You can't do that anymore. And when it came out about a year and a half ago, they said they were going to fix it, and they still haven't. So it'll be interesting to see if Windows 12 fixes it. I tend to doubt that. But that's interesting to hear. One thing that you should try never to do is if you're blowing air into these fans, I always have problems. The bearings on my fans go bad eventually. And the one thing that you don't want to do is blow air through the fans when it's not immobilized. In other words, most people give the instruction, take a toothpick or something so that you stabilize the fan so that it doesn't move, then you blow the canned air. And if you don't have a lot of dust like you had, that's a better move, because if you don't put the toothpick in, you can screw up the bearings, which I've done in the past. So, okay, I'll put that away. It's, even in good old Brooklyn, things can get dusty. I take apart these computers and blow them out and clean them up every so often.
Roger, that makes sense about the fan. I'll start doing that from now on, because I definitely wasn't immobilizing the fan. But the dust out here is crazy. I didn't realize there's just so much, always dust. If you want to go sit down in your backyard, you got to dust off the chairs or something. And then if you come back the next day, you got to dust off the chairs again. So there's a lot of dust, but I will definitely take that into account with the toothpick. Thank you for that good advice. Back to you, Roy.
You're welcome. Well, this is probably a combination of being in a desert with a lot of sand around and also have very low humidity. So it doesn't really give an opportunity for small aggregate matter to kind of clot together and get heavy and kind of fall out of the air. So everything's probably that fine, powdery stuff like talcum powder all over the place. Anyway, do you have have a tech question tonight?
No, my only tech question was making sure that this sounded good at these settings, because for some reason my gaming headset, the Echolink refused to work with. I don't know why. So I put the one I use on when I have the meetings with you guys, and it seems to be working fine. I just had to adjust the sound, so I just want to make sure the sound was good. So I'm good on that, so hopefully I didn't hijack the net for an erroneous purpose. Back to you, Roy.
No, not at all. By the way, how's my relative sound, relative to Bob's? Am I still much lower amplitude than Bob's?
Negative. Actually, you're a little bit better than Bob's, at least for me out here. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I goose the microphone. I don't goose it. I use the same microphone and mixer for the technical net on Sunday nights, and I set the volume a little bit lower there. So I just have to remember to crank up the volume here. So very good to hear. So great to have you here, Joe, as always. I look forward to hearing you on the 10-meter net once again. Before you know it, we're going to change the clocks. So hopefully that'll help things.
Roger, roger. Okay, thanks, Roy. Thanks, Bob. I'm going to sign off now because it's dinner time, and I got to get to dinner. So thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it. Stay safe, 73, to you and Bob, and talk to you guys soon. N2DEJ, clear.
Joe.
Okay, very good. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you down the line. 73. This is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here to hopefully answer technical questions and discuss technical concepts. So if there's anyone out there who has any of those, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
This is Larry, WCRI, Jersey City.
Hello, Larry. What can I do you for?
Hi. I just have a couple of questions. My first question, I'm in my apartment with an antenna inside my apartment. I just want to know how clear do you hear me?
Well, I hear you. You're about, I'd say, 60% noise, but I can make out all the words.
Okay. So what would you recommend to clear it up if I need to, do I move things around or do I
Okay, I'm assuming that you don't have any kind of power setting that you can set to a higher power level, because that would be nice and useful. So I don't know if you're operating on a handy talkie. Sometimes handy talkies come in low, medium, and high. So if you're on medium, you might want to try high. Assuming that that's not feasible, it sort of depends where your antenna is. If you, again, operating on a handy-talkie, you might want to kind of rotate the handy-talkie in space, because sometimes a signal that gives you the best reception isn't the best signal to be heard on the repeater. So you might just kind of rotate that, or you might get closer to a window. Windows tend to be RF transparent, so that's probably better than a wall. If your antenna is someplace else and not really movable, then you can't really do much about that, unfortunately. But, depending upon the situation of how you're getting into the repeater, whether it's HT, whether it's a HT antenna, whether you have the ability to raise the gain, raise the output power of your transmitter, those are a couple of ideas. Unfortunately, changing a radio setting other than the power level isn't really going to accomplish much.
Just let you know, I'm on a mobile, it's called Yaesu MT99A, and I have an antenna near the window of the phone. I have a power setting 50 watts right now.
Okay, I assume 50 watts is the maximum output for that radio. And you said the antenna is near the window. Can you put it up against the window, unless it's going to have a problem with however you're grounding it?
I'm pretty close to the window. I don't know if I could move it any closer from where it is. And you're right, the highest is 50 watts on this setting right now.
Okay. I mean, I can hear you. It just, you know, it's noisy, but it's intelligible. At some point in the future, you may want to play around with Echolink. You know, it has its foibles, but I set up Echolink so that anyone can do that. Cell phones have the application. PCs have the application. Macs have the application. So it's an alternative if you're interested in playing around with it in some future.
That was my next question, if you don't mind, is about Echolink. I did set it up, and I am able to communicate through my radio, and I can hear it on Echolink through this repeater. But when I talk to Echolink, I don't hear it coming through my radio. And then I read that there is maybe it's on only sometimes. I'm not sure if that's correct. Back to you.
Okay, not quite sure exactly. You shouldn't need the radio if you're on Echolink. I mean, if you have an Echolink connection via your cell phone or your computer, it should give you the audio in and out. If what you're telling me is that when you talk into your Echolink connection, it doesn't seem to trigger the repeater and it can't be received on the radio, that's a curious problem. Assuming that your ports are working, did you try the little, I think it's under tools to check port forwarding and such?
I'm new to Echolink. I literally just signed up a few days ago. So I'll play with more of the settings and try to figure that out. I'll try that maybe a little later.
Okay. I find it a very useful tool. Matter of fact, back in 2011 when I got my license, I didn't have any radios, and I used my iPhone's Echolink app to kind of get onto a local repeater, and I ended up talking to some guy from Romania. It was my first contact using Echolink. I mean, the problem with Echolink, unfortunately, is that if you're in a conversation with more than one other guy and there's a lot of quick keying going on, you can't get into the repeater if someone is transmitting, and then you have to wait a certain amount of seconds for it to reset. But if the next guy quick keys you before you can get in on Echolink, and then it goes back and forth, you could just stand there and not be able to talk. So as long as people understand the nature of Echolink and don't quick key too badly, then it's a very useful piece of equipment to have. I recommend it to most people who get their license to get the credentials and such. But, you know, when you have a chance, nothing better to do, I think it's under the tools where it says check port forwarding. It's a very simple procedure, and then if, God forbid, you actually need to change settings on your router, there's a lot of stuff you can Google that explains it.
Just a couple more questions on Echolink as well. So I did get an email saying that I got a PIN or a set of numbers, right, so I can make a vanity if I want to, etc. Do I have to use that as my call sign instead of my actual call sign on Echolink, or is Echolink technically not a radio tool that I don't have to use a call sign at all? I'm not sure. Like, my call sign, you use the digits they sent to me, or I don't know the etiquette, if you will.
Okay, it's a legitimate amateur radio tool because it gives you access to transmitters on radios. So that's why they needed to you to prove that you were properly licensed. You should have registered with.
This is WTCRI. I apologize. I think you got cut off. I didn't hear the last part.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I'm the source of Echolink for the repeater, and so the way that I have to log in and communicate requires that I do a little trick and log in on Echolink myself using a secondary computer. And unfortunately, it's possible for Echolink to drop links. When that happens, my connection through through this haze of electronics and computers falls away. And so I had to log back on to Echolink. If Ralph was still here and logged in, I wouldn't have this problem. But, you know, that's the problem with Echolink. What was the question again? It's been a while since you asked it.
No problem. The question with Echolink was that I was just wondering if I, on Echolink, don't sure if it's considered to be amateur radio or not, because it's on the internet. Do I use my call sign, or do I use the node numbers they give me? So when I go on, I get this digit number of some sort as a node number. Do I use that? Do I use my call sign, or do I need anything at all? You know, do I do anything at all? That's what I, my question is. Over to you.
Okay. It is considered amateur radio because you had to provide proof that you have a proper license, and they're giving you access to transmitters all over the world due to that. So it's an amateur radio technology. It goes over voice over internet protocol, but it's still considered amateur radio. When they give you, you have two node designations. You have a unique digit node number. They call it obviously a node number. And you can use that to dial up that node. But also, most likely, if you go and look at the application and do a search for W2TRI, you will also find that that's the node. So rather than when I tell people about the node to the repeater, I don't give them the numeric code because that's kind of difficult to remember. I tell them to do a search for KC2RC-R. If you are a server, if you're a repeater, you get either an R or there's another initial. If you're not in server mode, you don't get a suffix, so it's just your call sign. So your node is the node number, but it is also W2TRI.
That's the information. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any other questions, Larry?
No, I'm good right now. Thank you. Thank you. This is W2TRI. Thank you.
Okay, very good. This is AC2G again. Once again, this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here and ready to take either questions or discuss technical aspects of the hobby. Is anyone out there with any questions or topics? Please feel free. Hit that push-to-talk button and give us your first name and your call sign.
Cody, KC3, LLC.
Hello, Cody. What can I do you for tonight?
Hey, Roy. I'm actually curious, what, if any, technical differences are there between Echolink and All-Star?
That's a good question. I think ultimately it's more about philosophy than anything else. They are unfortunately non-compatible methods of interfacing a radio signal to voice over internet protocols. So they both Echolink and All-Star have packets that travel through the internet. If you don't have internet service, you can't do diddly squat. But ultimately, it's kind of the weird philosophical differences between the two. In Echolink, there is no need for hardware. Everything is rendered either at the client's end in software, and they handle the hardware on their servers. And they're pretty much designed for people having conversations over repeaters all over the world. They don't like it when people just listen to the Echolink. They like participation. And also, if you operate two instances of Echolink on the same IP address, in other words, if you have two accounts or two people have accounts in the same house and they use both of them without disguising their IP address, you get angry letters from Echolink. Most Echolink is going from individual to repeater. You can sometimes have a conference where it could be a conference solely on EchoLink servers, but I think EchoLink prefers for it to be ultimately hooked up to a repeater. All-Star has a different philosophy completely. You can't do this software. You have to do this with hardware. You need to get your own node. You have to buy a hardware node, which is very similar to a hotspot. You have to apply for a node number, and then you can link your node to anything that you want. You can link your node to a repeater's node. You could link your node to another user's node. And so they're more interested in you getting the hardware and interacting with other All-Star people. So a little different, but under the hood, they're both internet voice over internet protocols with servers involved.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I've seen a couple of different clubs that'll, I think, sort of bridge the two. Is that mainly done from like the club's repeater itself and not something else that can be done software wise?
It's AC2GS, by the way. It's a nice feature of some, I can't tell you all-star nodes. I have both an all-star node and a hotspot, so I play around with them. And you can hook things up so that you can hook up EchoLink through your all-star node. And you could also link other repeaters. LIMARC, the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club, used to link their major repeaters together using a 900 megahertz radio link. But a few years ago, they did away with that, and they developed an internet-based All-Star link so that All-Star handled the linkage of the two repeaters as though they were one. And also, as long as they were doing it, they hooked EchoLink into that All-Star node. The only problem that I see with that is that if you have a native All-Star, a native EchoLink node operating, your application will usually decode who's linked in by their call sign. Whereas if you do it through All-Star, it will only show the node number, which you then either have to look up, or if you don't want to, you don't even know who's the guy on the other end. But it does work, and LIMARC has been using it for a few years, and it works for them.
This is KC3 LLC. Okay, Roy, yeah, no, thank you so much for that information. That's all the questions I have for tonight. Back to you.
Okay, very good, Cody. Good to have you aboard. Hopefully you'll be back in future episodes, and I thank you for your participation tonight. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 9 p.m. to help local hams, and occasionally via the EchoLink, not so local hams. So if anyone's out there and they have any questions or comments for tonight, please hit that push to talk and give us your call sign.
Katie 2NVB, Roy, I have an EchoLink question if nobody else comes in the next couple minutes.
Sure, the more the merrier, Bob.
Okay, you were talking about EchoLink, so I was playing with my... I haven't done anything with EchoLink in years, and so I have an app on my phone for EchoLink, and I turned it on, and it gave me my phone is not on Wi-Fi now. I think that's what it means. It says when you're on, I guess, it gave me an error, say I was on direct connection, and that I couldn't do that. I had to change to either relay or public proxy. So I went into the settings and just changed it to relay. But I don't know a relay from a public proxy from a hole in the ground. Which one should I use, or does it matter, or that's my question.
Whatever works for you. You know, I mean, the problem that I have with proxies is that they're not fundamentally a stable thing. They're guys who would just kind of say, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And some of them do it better than others. So, I mean, probably what happened when I got thrown off was this list of identical call sign proxies that some guy sets up was kind of feeble and threw me off of it, and I went on to another one of his proxies. So if the proxy works, then great. If you find that the other setting is more stable for you, then I would suggest that you stay with the more stable of the two settings.
Okay, I haven't tried to do anything. I just changed a setting. I haven't tried to go on or anything. So you're saying I should probably just try relay and see if it works? Because I don't know what, I mean, I know what those words sort of mean generally, but I don't know anything about what it means in terms of EchoLink. Is relay probably the most likely better choice?
I would think so. I'm not 100% sure because it's a long time since I looked into the docs on this. But there's kind of two ways there's three ways of hooking up EchoLink. One is via a router that does port forwarding. Another is by selecting a third-party proxy of nice people who volunteer their servers to operate as a relay. And with phones, I found that you know they have kind of built-in relays that are usually very stable. So if you can set it to relay and the relay itself is stable, and you know you don't have to chat for an hour and a half to find out how stable the connection is, you can just find a busy repeater and just listen and notice if all of a sudden the audio fails because it lost the connection. And you know if that works for you, then great, leave it at that and forget it. I never fiddle with my cell phone's settings that way, but for the PC ones, they don't really offer that, so I have to deal with proxies. Sometimes it's good nights, and sometimes it's terrible nights.
So you say set up a proxy, or finding, I guess, because the thing is just public proxy, and there's another thing that says custom proxy. And then if you type that, then you have to fill in the host name and the port number and password thing. So maybe that's what you're talking about. But anyway, the other thing is, I guess the reason it wouldn't do direct is it because I was not on Wi-Fi, but I was on just 5G network instead.
That's a good question. I think I've always used my Wi-Fi connection on the cell phone, but it could be something like that. That it has to do port forwarding, and you know, if you operate through Wi-Fi and you're the only instance of EchoLink, then your router will one time and one time only, unfortunately, will hook up the port forwarding automatically for you, and then you're in. But if you go in through a cell tower, I don't think cell towers are equipped to do port forwarding, so that's probably the problem.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I don't even have Wi-Fi. I've never gotten a router because even though I use a laptop, I always leave it parked in the same place, so I just plug it in directly with an Ethernet cable to the modem, which is probably a bit more secure and reliable anyway. So, well, that's another question I could broach to you if no one comes in, because I have another reason why I think I want to get a Wi-Fi router, and if you could just recommend one. I don't need something super high power because I live in basically a 360 square foot tiny apartment. So if you have one, or just a way to shop. And I don't know, I have Verizon, not Verizon, I'm sorry, I don't have Verizon. I have Spectrum for internet. Do they provide routers? My girlfriend thought maybe they do that. I never even asked because I never wanted one, but now I do. Anyway, that's enough for your plate. Back to you, Roy.
AC2GS. Okay, let's talk nomenclature. Your modem is a router. They're kind of the same thing. When you're saying router, what you really mean is an access point, which is a Wi-Fi access point. You can combine the two. A lot of routers offer Wi-Fi access capability, and you could probably get that from your ISP. You know, if you call them up and you've had this router slash modem for many years, and you know, maybe they'll give you a good deal, or you know, who knows. So that's the difference between a modem slash router and an access point. And you can get, in your case, it's probably not terribly important because the benefit of the latest, greatest Wi-Fi is its ability to push a lot of signal over a lot of distance, and also to operate as a mesh, so that instead of having different named Wi-Fi access points that I used to do years ago, they're all named the same thing, and they're smart enough that when the strength of one Wi-Fi access point gets weaker than another one, it hops over and makes a connection to the other one that's labeled the same name. But you wouldn't need anything like that. You're not handling, you know, gigabits of data over Wi-Fi. You know, you find yourself a good brand name out of Amazon. So if you have any problems with it, you can send it back. And you should be fine. Right now, the latest, greatest Wi-Fi standard is 7. But you could operate with 6 and not notice the difference, or even 5. So it's not important for you to kind of have the fastest multi-operating mesh system in the world.
Right. So I just have this thing that it's an interesting thing. You know, I'm into birding. It's this thing that, if you lived in a house with a yard, which I don't, well, I should think of my window during the summer, it'll record, it just records, and it hears what it, and these sounds, and it sends up to this big birding database that even ornithologists use for data, et cetera. But that thing will parse it out, and then I have an app on my phone, I can see what birds at 5:30 in the morning, some bird it heard. Certain kind of bird. Anyway, so the point is, it hears this, it's a little SD card, and records a bunch of sound files, a bunch of small sound, and it just uploads them. So something that's reasonable, it doesn't have to be super fast, because if it sits there a couple hours, say I went on a bird walk, it's portable, I can take it with me on a bird walk, or just whatever. So it needs Wi-Fi. That's kind of why I want to get this router, just for that. Back to you.
Okay. One thing I would suggest is, if you still have any kind of documentation for it, find out if it's if it accepts 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi or just 2.4, because there's a lot of devices of a certain age where they were designed with a 2.4 chip, they do well with a 2.4 Wi-Fi access point, and when they have to kind of deal with an access point from the 21st century that's operating both a 2.4 and 5, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. So if this particular object is operating at 2.4 gigahertz, you might want to look into a less expensive access point that only gives you the single band rather than the fancy schmancy two band, 2.4 or 5 plus 5 gigahertz.
Yes, absolutely. This thing, it states it only takes 2.4, even though it's a new device. I guess they just do that. I don't know if it's cheaper or easier or what, or they just don't think it's necessary. So yeah, I'll think about that. And if maybe the thing that takes, I guess if I had one that would take the 5 or whatever it is, also, it wouldn't hurt if I thought, you know, if it wasn't that much more expensive, I might just get it. It would still work for 2.4, right? So if I ever had another need for Wi-Fi, I'd have a faster one where it might matter. Right, so the more expensive ones would also still take 2.4, right? But yes, this one only needs 2.4. And it does need 2.4. You have that option.
Yeah, 2.4 Wi-Fi chips are relatively less expensive than 5 gigahertz. So when people, when manufacturers are cutting corners, that's why to this day there's still a lot of products that only operate at 2.4. And although I would love to tell you that if you have a 2.4 and a 5 dual band, it will work wonderfully, I can't, because it's very weird about that. There are some chips that coordinate it very well, and there are some chips that keep on kind of giving you giving more expensive access points the false promise that they might be able to receive 5 gigs. So they keep on going back to 5 gigs and failing. So if you don't want that nuisance, and that's the only thing that you have, again, you don't need anything fancy, I would go with a straight 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi access point, because one thing you will never have a problem with is the device will never fail when trying to accomplish a 5 gigahertz contact, because there isn't any.
Gotcha. Yeah. So probably better just to get a 2.4. So if I just had a 2.4, I mean, once I have this, whatever you call it, access point, I would, I guess I could, you know, if I wanted to take my laptop into the other room, it would be adequate for going on the web and stuff like that. I guess maybe not so good for watching a movie, but if I did that, I'd probably just do it here with my Ethernet cable. And also my Kindle. My Kindle has some kind of, it's not LTE, it's some kind of 3G or something. I can get books and stuff on it that way, but it would be nice. If I had the router, it might be faster and more reliable. But I guess 2.4 is probably good enough for that stuff too, or not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, unless you're watching ultra-high definition, you know, 4K, 60, 120 frame videos, it should be enough, you know. And it's certainly more than enough for Kindle, which is just text. And, it's probably going to be a little bit better than, it's basically Kindle has two models. One is just purely Wi-Fi for local connections, and the other one offers you a cell phone so that if you're out and about, it'll by itself connect to a cell tower and download the text file. So if you happen to have a Wi-Fi at home, the connection is probably a bit more consistent. So yeah, you could use it for the Kindle without any problem. And I know a decent 2.4 is fast enough that unless you're watching strange videos that have incredible bit rates, I don't think you're gonna have a problem.
Yeah, I don't subscribe. I do have Netflix stuff. I hardly ever watch it. I'm probably paying for it every month, but it's not the highest. I think I one foot had the higher quality, and I realized I don't think it made any difference on the computer screens that I have, and I changed it to a lower tier, and I'm sure that would be fine on 2.4, and I watched the occasional movie or documentary or what have you, so yeah, it'd probably be fine.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we kind of look at things fancier than they need to be. The more fancier it is, the more problems that can creep into it and incompatibilities that can creep into it. I mean, I have Eero, which is a Wi-Fi 7. It's a mesh and all kinds of fun things. And don't you know it, my old OpenSpot hotspots will not merge with it. It just they just don't like it. I turned off the 5 gigahertz. They wouldn't pair. I went into legacy mode. They wouldn't pair. I contacted the guys in Estonia, and after giving me some cut and paste nonsense, they just stopped responding to me. So, I mean, sometimes with the highfalutin, bleeding edge nonsense, you can cut yourself.
Yeah, too many more things can go wrong, more, I get it. Yeah, okay, cool. So I'll just look for, what looks like people give it pretty good ratings, a solid performing 2.4 modem. I'll probably just do that. Won't be too expensive, and I guess they're not that hard to, I don't have to talk to my internet provider about this, do I or do I, to configure it? I see I've never had one of these things, so I've never had to configure one, so I have no experience.
KE2EDR?
Yes? KE2, you want to say something?
Hey guys, it's KE2EDR. I was listening to the conversation, and I wanted to offer some advice if you'll take some.
Sure, what's your first name, sir?
Sure, this is Kilo Echo 2 Echo Delta Romeo. This is Fernando. And I wanted to discuss that
okay, Fernando, your signal's kind of noisy. It's about 85% noise. Is there any way that you could grab onto the repeater a little stronger? Is there a way to put out more power or play around with the antenna a little bit to hopefully capture it more?
How's this sound? This is a little bit increased.
It's 100% better, Fernando.
Yeah, so I just wanted to offer a little advice to Bob if he's okay with that, KE2EDR.
I'm fine with that.
Sure, Fernando, please do.
Aside from your ISP giving you whatever they've given you, that's a dual device, provides you internet, should have provided you with Wi-Fi, 2.4 included. The two types of companies you're going to want to take a look at that has the easiest user interface for setup by step would be anything by TP-Link or Netgear. Copy?
I heard Netgear clear. I think the other one you said was TP-Link, like Tango Peter Link.
That is correct. Tango Papa Link. And they're pretty cheap and extremely user-friendly, offering both the 2.4 just talked about and the 5. Some of them offer more. When you look at them online, they do offer pictures on range. So please reference those pictures. They are very informative of what they can and cannot do as far as range.
Copy that. Yeah, range. Actually, in some ways, I might prefer shorter range because I live in a like, very small apartment. So yeah, it'd probably actually be a plus that it didn't, people wouldn't get my signal. You know what I'm saying. It's probably best that only not too many more people get it besides myself. But I don't need a lot of range, yeah.
So, sir, that would depend on your password. Make sure you write that password down, stick it in your wallet, make sure it's not something like Mickey Mouse or anything that is a full word. Keep it to something that maybe you'll never say in your entire life. Throw some letters, throw some numbers, throw some special characters in there. But make sure you write it down. And keep in mind, if you do not wish to create a password so that nobody else will be able to get it, most devices that you get nowadays will have a password under the device itself. Always, there will be a password under the device itself. That password is customizable, but it can stay that way, and you can always go under there and take a look.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, well, I'm kind of aware of that because my girlfriend, I get, oh, what do I... I hooked up my stuff so I could visit her and I could use my her Wi-Fi. And it was, oh, what kind of a device? Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, that's so they set a default password and it's under the device. And, yeah, definitely I'd use a password. I'm not one of those guys going to make 12345 as my password or something like that. But thanks, man. Yeah, that's great.
Anytime. And if I may also, for the Echo Link, you may want to try just uninstalling that bad boy and reinstalling and redoing that whole thing. And definitely stay on relay.
Is it relay? Okay, that's what I got it set for now. Right. It was just a guess, but according to Roy, it was probably the better guess.
What's your call sign? I'm sorry?
KD2NVB, Kilo Delta 2, November Victor Bravo. My name's Bob.
Hey Bob, this is Kilo Echo 2 Echo Delta Romeo. I'm a brand new ham actually, so if you do not mind, I am going to log this, if that's okay with you.
Log it? You said that's fine. So you're Kilo Delta 2, right?
That is correct, sir. Kilo Delta 2. I'm sorry.
Kilo Echo 2, because I was looking at what I just wrote down. Kilo Echo 2, Echo Delta Romeo. Again, Kilo Echo 2, Echo Delta Romeo. My name is Fernando.
That's Fernando, thanks. Yeah, I was going to say, you said Delta. It would have been weird because I meant you've been around longer than me. And you just said you were new. Yeah, I got it. Thanks, Fernando. Hope to talk to you again.
Oh, definitely. I'm a brand new member to this club. Just started. I monitor in the early morning sometimes before work.
Thanks. I guess we'll kick it back to Roy, KDAC2GS.
Yes, indeed. This is AC2GS. Thank you, Fernando. Thanks a lot. Welcome to the club. And please don't be a stranger here. We appreciate participation, especially information. And the way most access points work is they include their own little hub. So the instructions will say to plug your router / modem into the Ethernet port of the access point, and then use the additional Ethernet jacks to connect your laptop on a wired connection. Things like that. Different access points have different number of Ethernet access ports. So, you know, you might get one with three, or again with four. You know, you'll see it on the pictures of the back of the unit.
Okay, right, like a little diagram. Yeah, the terminology question. I always thought the modem was what I've got now, you know, that connects you actually to your internet provider, and that the router, I always thought the router was the wireless device that, you know, would send a signal to the modem, you know, when you're using wireless. So, did I get that wrong?
Yep, you got that wrong. In the very early days, there was no real router. There was just a modem, and the modem would plug into a phone line and would translate the tonal signals into data streams, and that was it. So you just had a modem. Then when ISP providers came online, they had more sophisticated electronics that not only translated the signals into something the computer could use, but did port forwarding and blocking and security things, and that was the router. So modems kind of merged into routers. Now, a router, again, can also be an access point, and most routers do include access points as part of their usability. But theoretically speaking, you can go out and buy an access point that is purely an access point and has no routing ability. It does not do any port forwarding or security things. It simply interacts with Wi-Fi signals and puts them out on an Ethernet cable that you then plug into a switch or a hub or a router.
Right, so I think this modem router that I have now, does it possibly have a built-in access point I didn't know about? I don't think it does, because wouldn't have some little antenna-looking thing. They usually have these little kind of stub antenna things on them. So I'm guessing I have to go out and buy an access point, right?
Well, it's within the realm of possibilities that the antenna could be hidden internally. Most relatively older Wi-Fi systems had external adjustable antennas, but I mean you can build an antenna. My present Wi-Fi 7 has no external antenna; it's built into the system, so it's possible not to have a visible one. You could either look up the model, you know, Google it, and get the specs, get the instructions. Probably it has its own IP address and its own password. And so you can log on to a web page and be able to change port forwarding settings and what have you. So I would kind of Google the model number and take a look at the instruction booklet. It's probably someplace on the internet. And, you know, if it has an access point built into it, it's just a matter of enabling it using the web page. And if not, again, you have the option, if you want to stick with this ISP, you can contact them and ask them if they offer a higher quality router access point that you should upgrade to. Or if you don't want to do that, which is perfectly fine, you just get something off of Amazon and just plug it in the way I said. You plug it into the modem router, and then you use the other outlets on the Wi-Fi access point as a hub for the rest of your wired system.
Right. I guess I could look up the model, you know, just pick up the thing and find the model number and also call Spectrum and ask them about it too, I suppose, maybe. Or about my specific account or whatever. Maybe that's useful too.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to you. A lot of people would rather have their fingernails pulled out than talk to technical support on ISP providers and such. But you could try it and see what happens. And, you know, if they try and sell you on something ridiculous, thank you, no thank you, and move on to the next option.
Right, since I only want a 2.4 anyway, I don't need the fanciest, schmanciest thing. Yeah, okay, great. So, yeah, that's probably all I have for now. That's, maybe somebody's out there.
Okay, maybe there is. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. I am the net control operator for this, the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. We're here on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. So if anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics for discussion for tonight, you know, we tend to focus in on amateur radio. You know, on my other technical net, we seem to be discussing Bose-Einstein condensates for some strange reason. Nevertheless, so if anyone has any amateur radio questions or comments, please hit that bush to talk. Well, it seems to be that we've kind of hit a wall tonight, and I think most of the people who came kind of came and went. So there's probably not that many people left behind listening to us. So maybe we should I should save my tech puzzle for the next episode. Once again, I am AC2GS. This is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or topics for discussion or particular interest in doing the TechNet puzzle for tonight, please hit that push to talk.
H1VB, I don't know the answer to the TechNet puzzle, so I guess it's just as well to hold off on it. No one else is there.
Okay, sounds like a plan. You know, it's been a while since I've done one. And I have to kind of store up a whole bunch of new ones because I usually do them in batches. And they usually last about 6-7 months. So give me an opportunity to fill up the container with a bunch more. Once again, before we call it a night, you know, we don't really have a closing time here. It's ultimately when people run out of questions or comments or topics. So if anyone still has any questions or comments or topics, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Very well. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each and every month. Our next meeting will be November 6th, which will be held via teleconference. Club members will be emailed with the details of logging into the meeting. Non-members wishing to join a general club meeting can email me, AC2GS, with some form of identification for the required link. Although our meetings informally begin after 7 p.m., our formal regular general meeting starts at 8 p.m. and continues until anywhere from 9 to 10, depending upon the number of points that are covered. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. on this repeater. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each and every month at 9 p.m., and we also sponsor a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband, or near there, depending upon usage. If someone's on the frequency, we move to the right or the left. We offer an audio stream of our KC2RC repeater on the internet as well as our 10-meter net. Just type into your browser stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. And as always, an application is readily available on our club's website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email to tech@kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website hosting services are generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, Three Aliens Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a bit more and talk a bit less. It's time to roll this all up and shut it all down, but we'll be back to do it all over again. So please join us for that. That'll be November 13th. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, especially my co-host, Bob KD2NVB. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So, this is Roy AC2GS, going clear and getting the heck out of here. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk to you all down the line. This is AC2GS, clear.
Thanks, Roy. Great net. Great for me. This is Bob KD2NVB, also going clear.